First meeting of the meeting of the Environmental Resources Policy and Finance Committee. We do have the minutes in front of us. Representative Hornstein, would you care to move the minutes, please?
I will move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Thank you all for being here. First, I'd like to, there's some cookies in that plastic container up there on the counter. Help yourselves. Those are cookies are actually compliments of John Williams, one of the regional people in Northwest Minnesota for DNR. He gave those to me and Rosa a while back. I'm not sure what that meant.
A while back.
What, a year or 10 years ago?
You didn't want to compost.
They've been in my freezer, trust me. And they are actually really good. Nice and moist. So they're made just the way Grandma used to make her chocolate chip cookies. So today we have DNR here talking about their strategic land asset management. They're going to be doing an overview on the program. This is obviously a topic that's important to me. When you take a look at the maps and so forth and you see how much public lands there are in northern Minnesota, we need to tackle this issue in a meaningful way. And with that, Mr. Meyer, introduce yourself and for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and I have with me Trina Zeman, our Land Asset and School Trust Administrator, to help with the presentation. And we also have Kathy Lewis in the audience to help with what I know some of your hard questions are going to be after our presentation. So I just want to take 1 second and take a step back to yesterday's presentation. In your packet, you have a copy of what is titled Commissioners. It says Management of Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Management of School Trust Lands. This is a commissioner's operational order dated February 23rd, 2012, that actually at the time, now School Trust Lands Director Aaron Vanderland helped draft. This document is a first of its kind for the department that lays out our operational processes and direction for school trust land management. I want you to know that since Commissioner Lander has come to office, the department, with the help and support of the legislature, has really focused on the management of school trust lands more so than any other administration to date. You heard Representative or Commissioner Rukavina's kind of sins of the past. We're trying to correct those very seriously. And Trina is the DNR person that reports to me that helps work with our divisions on all those issues. And just the other day, we had a multi-divisional meeting talking about what is sound natural resource principles, and we're updating this document with input from the School Trust Lands Office to reflect those issues and our current management practices. So I just want to reaffirm that we do take our trust land and our fiduciary responsibilities very seriously, and we're moving forward with that in a positive direction.
Thank you. To that point, Commissioner Meyer, I would say that was going to be my question. If this was dated in 12 and we made some changes in 14, how is this going to be modified to reflect the legislative changes that were signed by Governor Dayton? So thank you for that.
And this was, Mr. Chairman, this was done after that legislation passed to kind of set the path forward, but we are in the process of updating it. It is kind of a daunting task, as Director Vanderland spoke of yesterday, getting all of our divisions focusing and talking the same way when you talk about sound natural resource principles. It's different on a scientific natural area than it is on a state forest, obviously, and we need to make sure that we're looking at it and thinking about it in the same way. So when that is updated, I will make sure that the committee gets a copy of that as well. So,
thank you.
Bless you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'm going to move ahead with our presentation. So, and I apologize in advance. Some of you may have seen some of these slides in the Legacy Committee on Monday, but I think it's important that we start with just a brief overview of the different land types we have as we talk about land sales. So I'm just going to briefly go through some of those slides here. And of course, just our mission statement. We work with citizens to make sure that we conserve and manage the state's natural resources, provide outdoor recreational opportunities, and provide for commercial uses of natural resources in ways that create a sustainable quality of life. So we have to take all these considerations all these factors into consideration and put a sustainability kind of side on it as well to make sure we're using our resources in the best possible way. Talk about our land base here. Our conservation mission is supported by a public land base, obviously, and we're very fortunate to have that. I think most of your constituents would say that. The types of land that we have: school trust, tax forfeited, CONCON, acquired, Volstead, and university. add up to about $5.7 million that the state manages and $2.8 million that the county manages. And I'm going to talk about these different land types and the benefits that are associated with them to local units of government here real quick.
Commissioner, excuse me for interrupting, but where do, into these categories, where do a WMA lands fall in?
They would be under acquired land. So all of our park land, all the units of the outdoor recreation land, well, it gets to be a little confusing because some of them are on school trust fund land. So we've taken all of the trust lands out of the park system, and I can get that information unless maybe Trina, you know offhand, probably not, how many acres of WMAs we have on school trust land.
I do not know that.
I'll get a breakdown of those numbers if you're interested, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Yep. Part of our inventory process we're working on. So school trust and indemnity school lands, we talked about that yesterday, the Enabling Act 1857, Section 16 and 36, the swamp lands, congressional grant of swamp and overflow waters, Minnesota identified lands by plat and field notes on government surveys at the time, the university lands, these are lands that support the state university system, and then the internal improvement lands are lands that are additional grants for internal improvements that were done in 1866. The consolidated conservation lands, these are lands in primarily northeastern Minnesota. You can see the counties Aiken, Beltrami, Couchiching, Lake of the Woods, Roseau, Menominee, and Marshall counties. They were forfeited due to the lack of non-payment for ditch assessments back in probably the late 1800s as they're trying to develop this land, or later than that probably. I have a date, I think, in here. As they're developing this land and the ditch payments, people couldn't afford the assessments that were placed on their land, and they went tax forfeited. Both said lands were given granted to us from the state government, and then tax forfeit lands scattered throughout the counties, talking from people, again, failure to pay their general property taxes, forfeiture to the ownership of the state. The state holds the title, but the counties manage the surface, so the forest, they can sell the surface if they wish. Most of our lands bill is made up of riparian county tax forfeit lands that currently need legislative approval for 150 feet or more of lakeshore. And then the state holds the mineral rights for those. So as we do mineral leases, sometimes those are associated with county tax forfeited lands.
Commissioner, excuse me. Representative Pocleton has a question.
Thank you. Do you have any idea how much of this land is farmable and is being farmed or pastured?
Mr. Chairman, maybe if we look at these maps here, we can get a better idea just by the geographical area. Most of the highly productive agricultural school trust lands were sold off decades ago, and that money was placed in the corpus of the school trust fund. But if you look at here, this map talking about school trust fund lands, primarily in northeastern Minnesota, a lot of, I think, half of these lands are productive forest lands. The rest of them are what we consider unproductive forest lands. Some of them may be wet, associated with wetlands or peatlands and things like that. But you can see there's not a lot. If you look way down, probably Houston County, Fillmore County down there in the lower right, there's a few trust land parcels there, but there's not a lot of farmable, tillable land. Maybe some county tax forfeit land would be tillable, but we can try to do an analysis of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I saw a report recently that indicated there were 1 million acres of farmable land, publicly owned land in Minnesota, and I realize it's not possible that that's all DNR controlled, but I'm just curious how much land you have under DNR control that is farmable. And I would like to include in that land that's being grazed. So if you could get that information for me, I'd appreciate it very much.
Commissioner Chairman, Representative Carlson, we'll provide that information for the committee.
Representative Lewick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On those tax forfeiture relative to the ditch assessments, at least in our part of Minnesota, most of those took place after 1900, and most of those ditches that created those tax forfeited land weren't even dug until about 1915, and it was the depression that destroyed that. Kind of a follow-up comment on Representative Torkelson's comment or question. Wealthwood State Forest, right next to me, in the 20s and 30s, it's got a massive drainage ditch system in there, and that was farmland. It's now forest land, and so where we can grow trees, we can also grow other crops. So, you know, we're a little bit further north of the frost line that most people like up there, but when you see forest, not all of it, but a good part of it, is certainly tillable. In fact, we've got a lot of land where I live that was tillable in the 30s, and due to economic issues, that stuff went back to forest land and actually went back to state or county ownership.
Proceed, Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, so talk about the school trust lands where they're located. The tax forfeit lands, as Representative Lewick was mentioning, some of those, you can see the distribution of them. Again, heavily distributed to the north and east part of the state, or at least the northern part of the state. And those lands are held in trust by the state, but the counties do receive the revenues off of those lands, so timber revenues, for example. And when they do sell those lands, they get to keep the funds off of that. And actually, it's the management of those lands that funds most of the county land commissioners' offices and the work that they do. So it's very important that we maintain that base, that working lands that are out there. The consolidated conservation lands that I spoke of and Representative Lewick talked about when they were given back to the state, the counties keep 50% of the gross receipts off of our forest management activities on these lands, off of all activities. So we're paying for the work off of the set up the timber sale to do the work on the lands, and the counties get half of the gross. So we're subsidizing the work on those lands. These lands are also very important for the counties that have them for their general operation budgets of the certain land management practices that they do. This is really what I think the crux of the argument that people have are, is the state owns, when they say owns too much land, these are the lands that the state actually owns. The rest of the lands they talked about, the 2.5 million acres of school trust land, the 2.8 tax forfeited, the 1.55 consolidated or Concon lands, Volstead and University lands, those have all been given to the state or granted to the state, or the state has received those because of forfeiture of property taxes. So these are the lands that we've actually bought. These are the cream of the crop, so to speak, high conservation lands that we want to keep and maintain and manage for people to use and for multiple benefits such as recreational opportunity, water quality, carbon sequestration, producing timber, things like that. So one of the questions, Mr. Chairman, that you often raise and we often hear in committee is that the state owns too much land. This is a map that we've updated here. You'll have this map in your packet that has some blue or purple on it that actually shows a public number and then how much the DNR owns of that number. So when I'm talking public, this map here, which is kind of hard to read some of the numbers, is just the state lands that are owned. So for example, like if you look at St. Louis County, I think that's like 36.45% that's state owned. Public lands completely is 58%, so there's another 20-something percent of federal lands. This map will give you an idea of the federal overlay versus DNR lands. So, example, in Coochachin County, total public land is 75%. The DNR owns 54% of that, with the majority of that being school trust fund land. So just to give you an idea that it's not all state-owned, when we talk about the state being the largest landowner, public landowner, and the fifth largest in the country, it's the U.S. Forest Service, it's the Chippewa Forest, it's Superior National Forest, it's the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, it's Voyageurs National Park. Unfortunately, some districts, such as Representative Eklund's, have many of those components in there, and you'll see that 75% public land. But it's also important to realize that without, and Representative Eklund, maybe you can comment on this being a former county commissioner, how important that PILT payment was to your general levy to operate the county, because I think the PILT payment in Coochachin County is, I have a table here, a large part of your general operating levy. So if these public lands weren't there, counties such as Coochachin, Lake of the Woods, Beltrami, for example, they would be millions and millions of dollars short in their operating budget, and I don't think it would be very challenging to levy a tax against the citizens and the businesses to keep those counties afloat.
Representative Eklund, response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. The tilt payments have been critical to keep our levy low because, as you can know, when there's about approaching 70% of public land ownership, it's pretty hard to levy on 30% of your land value and keep a county running. So. And a lot of that, I might add, is non-developable besides. So.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Eklund, thank you for that, because a lot of that land, if it wasn't in state ownership, I don't know where it would be, because it's undevelopable, it's wet most of the time, its recreational access value is minimal for the most part, so this is important to keep in public ownership to keep the county solvent.
Representative Eklund, I can see a response there.
As former Representative Dale used to say, if you fall off a sidewalk in your National Falls, you might drown.
Representative Lagunias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going back to the DNR acquired lands, the map, and it actually surprised me when I looked at it, because you have a prairie, I don't know what you call it, across the western section of Minnesota.
Prairie pothole region?
No, where you are to acquire lands for hunting.
Part of the pheasant plan, are you referring to?
Yes. And I looked at this, and I thought I would see a brighter green streak down the western side of Minnesota. So I think it would be helpful for us to see a map that had this on it, maybe bigger, and also how you're doing with acquiring those lands.
Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, Representative Lugenius, actually we do have a slide that shows kind of the prairie pothole region that is our priority for land acquisition, and we can overlay that. I'll show you that map at the end of our presentation, but we can overlay that with what we have acquired in that region. This is our priority, obviously.
I think that would be helpful, because that is where we talk about acquiring land, and it doesn't look as green to me as I had expected.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a statement. This conversation is going to go on and on, and I just want to make sure that people understand that even if you're getting kilt, the kilt is coming from tax dollars, and there's a bigger picture here for our taxpayers than just the land. I don't agree with the notion that this land would be wasted if the state didn't own it, and I also strongly disagree with the fact that everything that they own is wetland. And you have to consider also, the federal lands and the nonprofits, not-for-profit lands. Because when you add everything up, no matter how you look at it, we're still either approaching, or because I can't get a definite count on some of the nonprofits, all the nonprofits, we're really very close to one-third of the state now is non-taxable. And so, yeah, you can talk about PILT, and I agree, if we're going to have the lands, we're going to have to compensate the counties. The idea is we're still putting a big strain on our taxpayers out there that they can't afford.
Thank you, Representative Green, and I concur with you on that. And that's a big part of the reason why we are pursuing and having this hearing today, is to kind of follow up on that. And I'm glad to see the Commissioner here today. We've had conversations, he and I, several times to that effect, and we had an exchange in committee last spring about where are we going to be in 18 years from now, and the commission and I both agree that the burden that we're placing on taxpayers are trying to after you acquire things to take care of it, to manage it and enhance it and make it better and actually make it so that it does do something good for habitat and wildlife, that's a very, very important issue. And I think a part of it, members, would you check your buttons to see. That's from demerit, Representative Wadini. Yes. So anyway, we'll continue on. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, just on that point, it's very important to realize that these land acquisition programs that are there, it's the DNR isn't driving this, right? It's not Commissioner Land. We're saying, Mr. Meyer, go to the legislature and get you $10 more million to buy some land. It's the citizens and your constituents out there who want this, who voted for the constitutional amendment, who recreate and participate on these lands in many, many different ways. And they're the ones telling us to do these, driving us, driving our mission. We seek citizen input, stakeholder input on our missions, and later on you'll see the plans that we've developed with stakeholders in mind, and actually citizen-driven processes that outline what they would like to see as a future state of public land ownership in the state. That's what we're trying to achieve. It's not the DNR. DNR working for the citizens of the state and people that, that we all represent to try to achieve their goals and wishes.
But to that point, Commissioner Ryan, I would say that I don't believe that when I hear that discussion about what people voted on in 2008, I don't think that very many people actually read the enacting language and statute and all that. I think they voted for a broad general idea. And when we talk about acquiring things versus restoring and enhancing things, I don't think that the general public really weighed in on that when they went to the booth to vote on this. I think what they did is they voted for, you know, water and land and arts and culture and that sort of stuff. And to suggest that they voted specifically for these things, I guess I strongly disagree with that. But I'm sure this discussion will continue. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it'd be really interesting to have that discussion about what people thought what they were voting for in relation to the last election. So we're going to see what a bunch of things that we don't think people voted for that are going to happen, like selling off public lands. That's democracy. People did vote. We may not like the outcome, but the language is what is. And Mr. Chair, you know, I believe that we should be doing more restoration and enhancement. I think that we should be more deliberative of time and what costs are and what we can do with our public resource. But when you look at this map, both maps, you see a large percentage of public land in northern Minnesota, which has driven the debate in this body and in the Senate for years. And then you look at these minus 1% public lands, and you look in the metro area with a low percent, we'd be happy to buy public lands in the metro area. But there have been conscious decisions to not make that happen, to exclude that from happening, that many people around this table have voted for. So you can't have it both ways. You can't have that we don't want public land in some places and then exclude it in other places. If we're going to have this discussion, then we should look at the whole state and where we want public land and the asset that public land is, because there are people who want public land, the public. And there's a responsibility to do restoration and enhancement to manage it. This legislature made a decision that the word protect meant acquire. And a number of people around this table voted for that. That protect equals acquire. I don't think, well, if you look up in the definition, that protect equals acquire. Protect means safeguard. And there's things that could be done to safeguard our resources that are not acquisition. But that's current law. If you don't want that to be current law, then we need to change it. And if you want to do maintenance, then you need to do restoration and enhancement. But there are also places that are threatened by development, often in the metro area or in regional centers, that it would be beneficial for the state to obtain for water purposes, for wildlife purposes, and for recreation. But if we are statutorily excluding those, then we're going to continue to have this conflict arguing over the same argument that's been going on since the amendment has passed. We can do better. And I hope that's the discussion we can have. How do we move forward on this? Because there are things that we should acquire. There are things we should protect. There are things we should restore. There's things we should enhance for the benefit of the public who did vote in 2008, probably in greater margins than most of us were elected with.
And to that point, Representative Hansen, would you also add to that list of four things that we had there, acquire and so forth? Would you also admit that there are parcels of land that we own that we should not own? Yes. Thank you. I look forward to working with you.
Mr. Chairman, that's a perfect segue into the second part of our
I knew it would be that way. That's why I did.
With that, I'm going to have Trina talk about it.
And by the way, we have to wish happy birthday to Kelly over here, too, this morning. So,
happy birthday.
Happy
birthday. Trina's going to talk about our strategic land asset management program, which we've started probably 5 or 6 years ago now, working with the counties and others to try to look at land. That land is an asset to the state. It's an asset to the department. It's an asset to the counties.
How long did you say that you've been working on this?
Oh, when did this land start? Probably
four and a half years ago now.
So working with one of the counties we first started working with was Roseau County. Sat down with Roseau County in a long process with our whole regional management team, looking at the county flat maps and identifying state land, county tax forfeit land, and trying to figure out what should we sell, what shouldn't we sell, how do we consolidate, exchange, and basically set the framework for the next 3, 4, 5 years on how we're going to work together to try to improve our assets at that regional basis. So Trina's going to talk about that, some of the areas that we're working on, and then we're also going to talk about some land sales statistics and some ideas on how can we improve things out there. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Trina.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for having me. Trina Zeman, Land Asset and School Trust Administrator with the Minnesota DNR. I'm talking to you today about SLAM, Strategic Land Asset Management. We'll go through a couple of slides of just some definitions and setting up the program. What is Strategic Land Asset Management? We consider it to be an umbrella which the DNR's land assets are optimized for use within the context of all Minnesota public lands. We are developing standards information framework by which these land assets are managed, and our focus is on collaboration between our staff internally, between state and other public land managers, and with the public. So how we define SLAM is as a proactive, interdisciplinary approach to improving the value, the conservation value, and the financial value of our state land portfolio. We look at it comprehensively planning for and implementing acquisition, sales, and exchanges, so that those are the tools that we have to be able to change the kind of the puzzle of land that we have that is all public land and the land under the DNR administration that we have control over. Some of the objectives of our strategic land asset management program are to improve the decision-making related to land asset management.
So we're Excuse me. Members, would you check your buttons and your mics, please? That's getting to be annoying. I'm sorry, but that was a technical difficulty. Proceed, please.
Thank you. So we're looking at decision-making and collaboration first. We're also looking at improving our land asset management policies and processes. A third thing we're looking to do is to improve our management and administration of the land, so recommending changes to our management that optimize our conservation outcomes and provide for easier, more efficient administration of these assets, so that is more of a continuous improvement effort. So when we're looking at programs for acquisition, we're looking at programs for exchange, and we're looking at programs for sales, what are the commissioner had given us to do under this framework to start strategic land asset management is he wanted us to start with goals. So we wanted to start with goals so that we could actually create strategies to meet these goals. We could measure ourselves along the way. One of the first goals that we identified for requirements for acquisition and exchange is for protection of significant natural resources. On the slide that you have in front of you, there's some examples of that. Also, there's a QR code here that will bring you to our DNR's 10-year strategic plan, goal one under that, which is natural resource conservation.
Representative Wagenius. You're welcome.
You have on here conserve prairies, wetlands, and grasslands. Conserve and grasslands doesn't compute with me. We used to have prairies. We used to have wetlands. But I don't know that grasslands are native to Minnesota. Are they native? Are you talking? What are you talking about here?
Chair, representative members, I believe that grasslands in this instance are native in some cases, where the MBS has identified grassland areas to have native prairie components within them. And then I also believe that grasslands in general is part of just natural habitat.
Representative Boquinas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean,
welcome.
If you have some natural and some unnatural together, the unnatural will take over the natural. So conserving that doesn't seem like the right word. That seems more like it should be in a different category of enhancing or whatever. But then in this, the second thing you said about grasslands, I didn't understand that they were natural. I don't understand what you were saying.
Ms. Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe when I was saying grasslands are natural, there are areas that we know to be grassland areas where the Minnesota Biological Survey has identified there to be prairie, native prairie, over these areas. When you're describing the type of land that you're looking at, so what's on the surface, you're describing forest land or you're describing transitional habitats, forest to prairie, or you're describing a grassland area. I think it's a general.
If I could follow up. If
Representative Wardingus.
If that's the case, I mean, I think we, it sounds murky to me, because if it's prairie, it's prairie. And if it's not prairie, if it's mixed, we're not conserving it. We are going to have to enhance it. We got to get rid of the, burn it to get rid of the weeds or whatever. So it does seem to me like we have to separate our categories here to kind of recognize really what we need to do, because it sounds to me like we need to do more management.
Ms. Gibbons.
Mr. Chair, I think you're right. There needs to be some clarity on this particular slide. We need to fix that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Proceed.
The second goal of strategic land asset management is to accelerate and target prairie landscape conservation. Protecting grassland, again, as in the slide, and wetland habitat is one of the most critical environmental challenges facing Minnesota. So I know many of you probably already know about the Minnesota Prairie Conservation Plan. We consider that to be a blueprint that focuses on these efforts, our resources, and demonstrates unprecedented cooperation between federal, state agencies, and many active conservation organizations. So we have six total goals. Of the, for this being our second goal, many of our acquisitions are solely focused to meet this goal. Our third goal in strategic land asset management is consolidation of land ownership. The DNR recognizes the need to better prioritize our management actions in order to achieve its mission work with citizens and conserve and manage the state's natural resources. We also know that consolidation reduces our efficiencies, increases our efficiencies, I'm sorry, and reduces our costs related to boundaries into the future. Fourth goal for strategic land asset management is to improve access to existing land holdings. One of the things we know within the DNR is that some of the lands that were given to us to be able to manage do not have appropriate legal access. Sometimes we can acquire management access. sometimes we cannot acquire access at all. So we do know that there is a large set of lands that we need to improve access to, and so that is another goal for the program. Goal 5 is centered around more outdoor recreational opportunities. We're looking at focusing our efforts on what some may consider close to home. We're looking at defining what that means. We know that this is a priority for the citizens of Minnesota. Our sixth goal related to strategic land management is around fulfilling our fiduciary obligations to the trust. I think you heard a lot about that yesterday. State law provides that it's the goal of the permanent school fund to secure maximum long-term economic return for the school trust lands, consistent with our fiduciary responsibilities. So, to summarize some of the things that we've talked about, the state and the DNR manage, so the county and the DNR together manage 8.5 million acres of land. Of that land that we manage, there are restrictions to the land, there's legalities to the land, there are funding source restrictions, there's specific purposes for public use. Examples of that are having our wildlife management areas, our scientific and natural areas, our state forest, public water access. They all serve different purposes. They all have different funding sources. We have land coming in through acquisition. We have land going out through sales. We have land that we're identifying to be exchanged. We are doing this in four different regions of the state, so all 87 counties. We have four different regions of the state. We have four land managing divisions. We have parks and trails, forestry, fish and wildlife, and eco and water resources. And then in addition to all of that, we have external partners and nonprofits that are also working to do the same thing, to acquire land and change the what people say is change the plat book. It's really complicated. It's really complex. What we've identified is we absolutely need to plan to be successful, and to make informed decisions, we need all points of view. One of the focuses of the program is to look at all of the points of view within the DNR and then try to hear from our citizens and our stakeholders externally and our conservation partners. The slide in front of you shows DNR and county SLAM projects that we have been working on since the start of strategic land asset management. Not all of them are the same, so one is not like the other. And there is some belief that each one of these projects ends up in a very large land exchange, and that is not the case because the location of our lands, the landscape, and the ownership patterns really allow for SLAM projects to have different objectives, and they face different challenges. So I'm just going to go through and give you a little summary of each one. In our northeast region...
Ms. Eamon, before you do that, yes. Representative Green has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had said that... Well, I guess I'll just come right to it. You talked about the land you acquire and the land you sell. Do you have, say, for 2016, the amount of land that was acquired by the state and the amount of land that was sold?
Ms. Zeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not have those figures in front of me, but I can get them for you.
Thank you.
In Lake County, in 2013...
Check your mics again, members, please. Okay, here.
Everybody pushes their button, and we'll see if it is our mics.
Now just stay like that.
Turn the volume down there a little bit.
Switch.
proceed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank
I apologize,
you.
Members. Yeah.
I want to step back just a little bit. So in 2010, the legislative auditor did a report on DNR and DNR's land management. A couple of recommendations that came out of that report was to continue to consolidate our checkerboard patterned ownership in the northeast.
And to that point, what progress have you made on that?
This slide, I'll be able to tell you the progress that we've made so far in our county projects.
Thank you.
The other recommendation was to continue with our strategic land asset management effort in a pilot that we had done in Roseau County. So that was the first project that we did in the Northwest region was in Roseau County. It was a project that started in about 2006. We were looking at doing land sales, land exchanges, and land acquisition within Roseau County. What we did at the DNR is we implemented then pilot projects around the state. So the second pilot project that we worked on was in Lake County. The state acquired, the state had land that we exchanged with the county, 822 acres. We received 1,910 acres in that land exchange. The third project that we worked on was in Kanabec County. The state land that was exchanged with the county was 1,963 acres, and the county the tax forfeited land that the state acquired was 2,180 acres. The project that the southern region worked on, because there is less of a land base down there, was focused around Renville and Redwood counties, and that focus, because there was less land base, had a lot more to do with partnership collaboration and looking at multiple use recreational areas. So they worked with the Minnesota River Watershed Alliance and other governments to collaborate for work in the Minnesota River Basin. Currently, what we are working on is a project in South St. Louis County that will look to exchange 7,753 acres for 7,961 acres of tax forfeited land. In the Northwest region, we're looking in Monoman County to do a strategic land asset management project because there is a high degree of complexity when considering land management decisions in Monoman County. There is not a land commissioner in Monoman County, and their auditor handles all of their land transactions. They have expressed interest in selling some of their tax forfeited land, and there is interest by the DNR to acquire land. So there are 9 acquisitions proposed in that county. What we want to do is to be able to work with the county, work with our partners, to be able to plan for all of the acquisitions that are taking place by the county, by the state, and to look at the sales that are taking place by the county and being acquired by the state.
Ms. Dean, to that point about Roseau County, I was pretty involved in the sale that they had there. They've done 2 different ones. Parcels have been identified, and they have a public auction, and they get sold just like that. So there's a lot of desirable land out there that the counties and the DNR worked together on to identify them, and it worked out extremely well. So, there's something good that has come out of this. But I think that the frustration that I have is that when we go through this and we're doing this strategic land asset management, we've been working on this for 5 years to exchange or sell and so forth, and it takes a long time to do this, but figuratively, in the blink of an eye, we acquire stuff. And there doesn't seem to be that same deliberative process that goes on with regards to acquisitions as there is with regards to sales or exchanges or consolidations. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, it is harder to sell land than to acquire land. You're definitely right. And part of the challenge we face is when we identify these large exchanges, for example, current law requires us to do appraisals and all of these things that cost money. So when we have these large proposals, and I think the next slide will show an example of that, we need to figure out a better mousetrap to get the work done after we identify these parcels, and we'll talk about some options that are there after we get through this a little bit. But it is a challenge to try to accomplish the end results of the strategic land asset management processes we find, and hopefully we can work with the legislature to identify a source of funding into the future to not only fund the state costs, but also the county costs that are incurred when we're doing exchanges and sales as well. So we appreciate working with you on that.
Okay. Representative Ring, did I get to your question? Did you? I had you on the list, but I... Go ahead.
Yeah, you did, but I'll ask another one.
Okay. And then Representative Johnson.
I just get really frustrated here because I can tell you that I know a lot of people looking for land in Monoma County right now. And there's not a lot available. And if I'm hearing you right, county wants to sell some tax forfeited land, and you are looking at the DNR acquiring it. Is that correct?
Ms. Zeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that was the initial proposal. What they are looking at right now is if it is if the acquisitions of the tax forfeited land meets the goals of our SLAM acquisition program. And what we've seen so far is that four of the proposals do not meet our goals, and so we are not moving forward on those acquisitions.
Representative Green.
Can you tell me how much property you own in Monoma County right now?
Ms. Zeman,
the state owns and the federal government?
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the handout that you have, Monoma County figures are 15% public ownership. That includes the DNR administered land, that includes county tax forfeit, that includes other public and semi-public state land that is federal, county, and tribal. That number is may have some errors, so it's only as good as the data that we have in that, those particular counties. In Monoma County, there is not an online system for our for the ownership and for the ownership information for the parcels. So it's information that we've had to gather along the way, so just for a caveat on that. I do believe that the DNR administration is 6%. The state land is a total of 9%, and then the public land is 10%. So I would assume that the difference in that is the federal and our tribal.
Representative Green.
I talked to the county. And I can tell you it's an excuse me, Mr. Chair, thank you.
You're good.
And it's in excess of 25% now. Property taxes in Monoma County are one of the highest, and as has been testified many times, I have three of the poorest counties in the state. And we are really concerned about losing more land. And I understand you're going to come across with the PILT. But it's, the counties are telling me that the PILT is not taking care of the property tax values that they're losing. And we're also losing community members when this land is gone. And so this is a big concern for me. I don't know how many acres you're looking at, probably not as much as in Roseau, but I think that should be a concern to you folks up in Roseau as well. So we're going to be really digging into this. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
we'll go back and confirm our database and our numbers. And I think it's important to realize when we're acquiring land, we are acquiring buildable land. We're acquiring land that needs to be kept in a conservation purpose. It's highly erodible. It needs to be used. It needs to be preserved for some reason. But we aren't out buying buildable sites for the most part. So I think it's important to realize that.
And I would add to that. Ms. Zeman, you stated that for the exchanges or whatever, the tax forfeit things, I think I heard you correctly when you said four of them do not meet our goals. And the immediate question that comes to my mind is what about the goals of the counties and the townships and the school districts and the goals that they have for being able to preserve what they have in their counties and their tax base?
Mr. Chair, for clarification, the four proposals that did not meet the goals for our strategic acquisition program were proposals that Monoma County made to sell their tax forfeited land to the DNR.
Okay, thank you.
And also I wanted to add, in Monoma County, the White Earth Indian Reservation encompasses almost the entire county. And so there is that additional public ownership.
Representative Brian Johnson. I'll come back to it.
Mr. Chair, when we were talking about the acquisition or the trade between the counties and the state, one thing I was hearing that made me a little concerned, because every single one that you mentioned, the state was getting more property than they were getting rid of. It makes me wonder what's going on. The people in this county PILT helps out, but it does not replace it. The county needs to raise their, or needs a facility like a new jail. PILT doesn't cover that. It's the taxpayers. When this land comes out of private ownership, it hurts the entire community.
Representative Hanson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think on these questions of how much land we own, those would be verifiable facts. I mean, we should be able to know whether it's 6%, 9%, 25%. The statement about 1 million acres of land that could be farmable, that should be verifiable. I mean, I would think we would be able to determine whether facts are real or if they're alternative.
Representative Green.
I need to clarify. I've never had anybody in Monoma County tell me they want to sell more land to the state, and so I'm going to have to go have a talk with those guys and see what's going on. I do know that they were going to approach the DNR for permission to sell some tax forfeited land. So we'll get that clarified. And just for clarity, too, White Earth Reservation encompasses all of Monoma County, and a good section of Becker as well as Clearwater, too.
And I believe you're a member of the tribe, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, that gives me a great opportunity here to remind you all to let your counties know if they do have tax forfeit land that needs legislative approval to get to the DNR, get that information to Kathy Lewis as soon as possible, because with deadlines rapidly approaching, we need to pull together a lands bill. So I'll work with your staff to make sure we get a message out to the entire House that if you have county tax forfeited land that your county is interested in selling that needs legislative approval, basically shoreland, you need to get that information to us as soon as possible so we can do a review and get that prepared for the land sales here.
We don't have a lot of shoreland in Marshall and Kitson County, but proceed. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it back over to Ms. Zeman here to talk about the St. Louis County examples. And just to go back to Representative Johnson's question, when we do exchanges, it's value for value. So we were giving higher value land to the county in return for less value land in our exchange. That's why we received more acres in that case. So.
Thank you. Moving on, for our SLAM project in St. Louis County, in front of you, you have an example of what the strategic or what the land base looks like in a before picture, and then what the land base can look like in an after picture. This is an example of a proposed land exchange right now. This example meets 5 of our 6 SLAM goals that we discussed previously. The goal that it does not meet is the prairie acquisition. It does meet all of the rest of our goals related to consolidation, improving access, conserving natural resources, meeting our fiduciary responsibility to the trust, and allowing for more outdoor recreation opportunities. This project right now is not final, it's in proposal stages. It is in need of funding at this point. So what we've been talking about is strategic land asset management underneath our exchange program, our sales program, and our strategic acquisition program.
Ms. Zeman, in the St. Louis County's exchange potential, you said it's needed funding. How much does that need?
Mr. Chair, the slide in front of you has estimate of costs for different types of land exchanges. So we look at land exchanges being small, medium, large, or jumbo. The South St. Louis, St. Louis County Land Exchange would be considered a jumbo exchange. It involves about 15,000 acres on the state and county side. I do not believe that we have done a land exchange of this size within the DNR. We know that it costs approximately $60,000 to do a 5,000-acre exchange on the state and county side. I'm unsure what the cost will be in total for this land exchange. There are some things that come along, like title issues, that could definitely increase costs. We do have right now an allocation, a $30,000 allocation for FY17 from the forest suspense account to increase sale and exchange activity for school trust land. So part of the majority of the exchange is actually involving school trust lands, exchanging them for tax-forfeited lands. So we don't have a final number.
And just one more. I just want to follow up because I want to. The number of acres here is 15,000, did you say?
Between the state and the county, correct.
Thank you. Yep. Proceed.
So the slide in front of you identifies some of the costs that we have associated with our land exchange program. We had the SLAM program in Kanabec County. Was about a $70,000 project. The land exchange in Lake County was also about $69,000. And again, South St. Louis costs are unknown. It's definitely a barrier for us to be able to do planning and implement the exchanges. The next slide shows some data on our sales program. The DNR has a modest sales program. We offer about 30 parcels per fiscal year. That is about, and we sell about 200 to 400 acres per year. So the slide in front of you on the left side shows the sale revenue over the last 16 years for sale of land, and on the right side is the acreages sold over the last 16 years for land sales. We offer each year. The offerings each year may amount to about 1,000 acres. The cost for a public sale of an acquired parcel is about $12,000. The cost for a public sale of a trust parcel is about $11,000. If the parcel is a 4-acre parcel, if the parcel is a 40-acre parcel, or a 400-acre parcel, the costs still remain the same. So that is definitely something that we are looking to improve in our process and welcome any ideas on ways to reduce the process or improve the process and reduce our costs.
Representative Ken Clark has a question.
Mr. Chairman, I think you might have clarified it when you were just saying the cost per acre. I thought you said earlier it was like 50,000 acres at 5,000. That's 10,000 acres. That can't be right. Did you say it's 10 to 12,000 an acre?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that would be for more for an exchange. I don't think there was a per acre value, though. It was for a total exchange.
Mr. Chairman, which number goes with the exchange and which goes with the sale?
Mr. Chair, Representative, back to the slide. A small-sized exchange that is about 50 acres or less is approximately $11,000 to complete. A medium-sized exchange between 250 to 200 acres is approximately $13,000 to complete. A large exchange considered 200 to 500 acres is $19,000. And when you get over 500 acres, this is where you really reach economies of scale, but the costs do go up as the exchanges do get larger.
Representative Clark. Okay. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions on that slide. One, are these specifically just DNR costs, or do these costs or estimates include the county's cost?
Ms. Zeman.
I believe, Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that these costs are the historical averages of exchanges. Historically, what we do is split some of the costs with the county. So we split the appraisal costs. The county does have work that their staff does that we don't account for in this estimate. the staff time that we do within the DNR is accounted in this estimate. So there are some unknown costs that the county does incur. But historically, we tend to split the appraisal cost, and we both have costs related to title reviews.
I suspected that, let's put it that way, that there are certainly some costs that the counties incur that I'm not sure they're reflected. Second part of this, the question is, how does this compare on the commercial side? I mean, we sell hundreds of thousands of pieces of property all over the state, all over the country. I realize it's a little bit different circumstance here, but have you looked at what it costs to do a real estate transaction to buy a 40-acre parcel that's no buildings, and compare that with what it's costing us?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I did, as I was preparing for this presentation last night, I looked at that because I thought maybe that might come up. So what we're looking at in comparison is our market, is the market within Minnesota. And so what you have for typical closing costs on mostly all land types, residential, industrial, recreational, is 3-6% closing costs. That's what you would have in a normal marketplace. So on a $250,000 parcel, 3-6% closing costs would be approximately $7,000 to $15,000. When you're looking at the costs related to all of the processes and procedures that the DNR has to go through in order to sell a parcel, it does not matter what the size of the parcel is, but we would need to have a $200,000 parcel, $200,000 valued parcel, at a 6% rate to equal the $12,000 in costs that are associated with that sale. We do have many sunk costs that the DNR incurs with regard to our sale program. We do have the ability to pass on costs to a buyer, but we definitely need to be more competitive to be able to do that. We need to be more upfront in what our cost structure is, and I think maybe a marketing plan for sales definitely wouldn't hurt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we might want to look at that in a little more detail and look at specifically the line items that are included in a closing cost for a private sector sale versus what we're doing, and see if there are some things that they're doing that may bring that 3-6% down that we don't have to do, and vice versa, just to really get into the a little more detail on that, because they do that every day, obviously, in a different arena. But we may be able to look at what somebody else is doing. I realize it's different, but we might want to explore that in a little more detail.
Ms. Eben.
Thank you, Representative. We have looked at options for cost reduction in our land sale program. So there is a slide ahead of you that does talk about some of the things that we could do. Going forward, we could increase our authority to do minimum valuation work, which is an abbreviated appraisal, from $50,000 to $100,000. So currently we have the opportunity to do minimum valuation work on parcels that are less than $100,000. That's definitely something that would reduce some of our costs. We could also look at eliminating the requirement to offer acquired land to state agencies and local units of government before offering to the public. This is something that takes time during our sale process. There are time requirements. It also costs money to have staff be able to complete those notices, to get responses, and to put publications out. Another option would be to add authority for us to sell our acquired land to local units of government for use for public purposes at less than appraised value. Currently, that is one of our barriers of moving parcels for that we feel that would be better managed by another government unit.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said it quickly. I'm not blaming you. Actually, I've been listening closer. But how much did you say, how much land do you offer for sale every year?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we offer about 1,000 acres per year.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then And you said you sell between 200 and 400?
Correct.
Ms. Zeman.
Okay.
Jim Green.
I can tell you that land doesn't last too long out there. And I'm wondering what is going on where you're offering 1,000 acres and you're only selling 2 to 4. I did happen to look on your site, and the first three ones that came up at least a month or so ago were 40-acre parcels that were half dry and half water with no legal access. Is that the kind of land that you guys offer, and is that why it's not selling, when people can't even get to it once they buy it?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, that's a great statement. We offer all types of land, but the state owns a lot of land that's out there that doesn't have any access. And one of the things we're exploring right now, I'm talking to the county commissioner, the county land commissioners, is the state pursuing the Cartway law to get that access so it's more valuable. This will be kind of controversial in some cases, as people who are landlocking these private forests that the state owns basically are using this for free. They're usurping state land we can't get at. I can't get at to hunt, but if it's surrounded by you and other property owners, it's your private forest. So we need to come together with the legislature to come up with a process to gain access to these parcels so we can sell them and people can move in on them and live on them. So that's the kind of land that we need to do, and those are the kind of things that we need, the tools that's not on this slide that we need to come up with. How do we sell isolated, scattered parcels that we're paying pilt payments on that the general public can't use? And we have a lot of those lands right now that are out there. So that's one of our priorities, is to work with the legislature to understand how do we gain access and sell those parcels.
I hope you have a strong heart, because you're going to have a heart attack here. I agree with you. We need to get access to the properties, but I also have another question. You're talking about what it costs you to sell these small parcels of land. Now, when you offer these for sale, and you said you could pass these costs on to the buyer, has that been a factor in whether or not these properties sell? Because for instance, you had 40 acres of land, and you were asking, I believe it was right around $1,000 an acre, which is a little steep for something that's half water, I will tell you. But is there an extra cost that's placed on to the prospective buyer for closing on that? And how much would that be?
Whoever. Ms. Zeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it has been the history of the DNR to pay for the majority of the costs for public sales and pass on the costs when we can. So when we know how much it costs to do an appraisal, or we know the service fees for a minimum valuation, where we can pass on those costs, we try to. There are situations where we have willing sellers that are looking to purchase land and looking to purchase, say, an acre of land. But because of certain issues, there are survey costs and there are appraisal needs that could end up being $6,000 worth of costs for a parcel that's a 1 acre or less for a willing buyer. There are instances where buyers are willing to pay for that cost ahead of time, so we have negotiated with that. I don't think it's a practice for us to pass on all of the costs to the buyer. I think that we are looking at that right now as a possibility of what costs we can, but again, in order to do that and be successful, we really need to have competitive costs. We need to have them up front so people know what they are, and we have ability to do that. We have to be more planful in our efforts.
So just as clarification, what you're saying is, yes, some of those costs are passed on, and that could affect the sale?
Ms. Stephen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the past, the majority of the costs have not been passed on, but there are instances where they are. Going forward, we're looking at passing on more of those costs.
Which would impede more sales, I would assume. I'm not even going to ask that question, because we'll just go back around and we're probably going to run out of time here, but I do believe that Representative Lewick is right, and I've looked for a better way to do this, because you should already have the valuations on these lands when you purchase them, so you know what they are, and if they're up for sale, it should be a simple matter to sell them. instead of going through a process that costs thousands and thousands of dollars for property that's not worth that much.
Thank you, Representative Green. Proceed, please, Ms. Zeman. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hanksman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. Number one, we're talking about 1,000 acres, apparently, that was offered up for sale over the course of the last year or two, it sounds like. And I'm wondering, to Representative Green's point, if these pieces of property are landlocked, they're inaccessible, why are we selling property that's not accessible? Why aren't we looking, especially with the conversation that we've had, not just this year, but of course in years past, we'd like to see more properties that can be moved back into productive use. Why aren't we looking to move those properties? I mean, when we're talking about literally hundreds of thousands, millions of acres, it's hard to believe that there aren't more than 1,000 acres that could possibly be considered, and then only out of that 1,000 acres, 350, 400 acres that people are even able to access and purchase? That seems a little strange.
Mr. Chairman, just on that point briefly, as I talked about at the beginning of the presentation, the 2.5 million acres of school trust land we manage for the children of the state of Minnesota, we need to work with the Office of Trust Land Director to make sure that those lands that you talked about yesterday is the divestiture process. Tax forfeited land being held by the counties have control of selling that land. That's another 2.8 million that they receive funds off of. The consolidated conservation lands, 1.5 million acres. I don't see many counties who have those lands wanting to sell those lands off because they're basically, it's an investment. They're making money off of not having to do anything with those lands, plus they get a PILT payment on it. So really we come down to the 1.5 million acres that the state has actually purchased that are the high-quality conservation lands that provide outdoor access, that provide connectivity into our forests, that are our state parks. So what we look at is divesting of the lands that aren't providing any conservation. They provide some conservation, but they aren't providing any access, management, or economic development activity for the state of Minnesota. And these lands should be sold because the state shouldn't own these lands that we can't access or manage. If we can't manage the land for the citizens of the state of Minnesota or have access to them, why do we have them on the books, and why do we have a PILT payment going to these counties for lands that we can't access? I just want to touch on something that's actually kicking off today in the northeast and northwest regions of the state. Deputy Commissioner David Shad is meeting with our regional management teams up there to discuss our 2017 land sales and reinvest initiative and how we're going to move forward. We're going to be looking at scattered lands, how we define them as their blocks of fee title acquired land. So this is just the green lands that we own that are 320 acres or less in size, not connected to other larger contiguous blocks of state land. And they either have access adjacent to public roads, they have limited access, or no known access. So we're going to conduct a land analysis in these in the 15 northern counties that have 20% or more public land ownership, and take a phased approach is putting these lands up for sale. So we'll be looking at these isolated parcels, scattered lands that don't belong on the state books, and looking at ways and developing tools to sell those lands and put them up for sale. Now, one option would be maybe if it's isolated, doesn't have any access, we offer it to the adjoining landowners first. If they don't want to buy it, then we pursue access and get access and sell that land. It's in the best interest of the state of Minnesota, unless the legislature wants to pass a law to tell us to give adjacent landowners property for less than appraised value or to donate it to them. We're going to need your direction and authority to do that. But it's divesting of these lands that aren't providing access that your constituents, our customers, our stakeholders can't access is our highest priority right now.
Representative Hyten, follow-up.
Commissioner, I appreciate that. Thank you, Chair. I'm just guessing that Representative Green, as he was to take a tour of his county, I'm just ballparking here, but I'm pretty sure he could find a few properties that might make make sense to consider moving in his district.
Thank you. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you mentioned Cartway a little bit earlier. That raises some hackles immediately. Has the DNR ever pursued a Cartway authority? earlier to access DNR lands?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beckman, in very, very limited circumstances to this point, I need to do some research, and I'll get back to you on specifically where that has occurred. But we have worked with members of the legislature so citizens could pursue the cartway on either state or county land as well to access their property.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a word of caution, having been through two of them, it causes a lot of unease amongst all the property owners. So there might be a better way to try to pursue access.
Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner,
Representative Eklund, I fully understand that. But as we talk about divesting of state lands, or as the federal government talks about divesting of federal lands, these are the lands that we should be divesting of, and we need to come up with tools to provide access to people to buy those lands. It doesn't make sense for us to continue to fight about land acquisition when we own land that should be sold that people are usurping because they own property around it. So we need to come up with a solution. As you're concerned about the land holdings the state has, we need to come up with a solution for these people who are prohibiting access to our citizens and our stakeholders to public property.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand that. It's just a word of caution. It usually causes lots of ill feeling.
Representative Green.
Three things. I'm just going to ask them quick. You can answer them, then I suppose we better move on. First of all, you had mentioned that you are going to be looking in the counties that have 20% or greater state ownership or non-taxable ownership, I would hope. And instead of doing that, why don't you just stop buying property, just take it off the list. You don't want to buy property there. It's not a question of if the county wants to sell it. The state has to come up with some kind of a platform that says we don't need any more here, right? And should the state be buying it is the question. The other is, who does your appraisals? Because a lot of private people out there might appraise these lands a little less than what you have them for. For instance, some of the land you had at $1,000 an acre will come up on the private market for sometimes around $750 an acre in the same areas over in Clearwater County. And as far as selling land as opposed to fighting acquisition, well, Solid Sands Bill alone this year is recommending another 11,000 acres bought, and you are only going to probably be selling around 200. So there is going to be a fight over acquisition for many, many years as long as you keep buying it.
So I think there's two questions there. You want to take those? Maybe three.
Mr. Chairman,
if you need them to repeat the question.
I wrote them down real quickly. You can see on this map here that the corridor area here that I spoke of with Representative Wagenius' question earlier, this is the Prairie Pothole region of the state. This shows that what we called at one point in time in the Pheasant Plan a thunderstorm map, where we should be purchasing and acquiring lands, our highest priority as a state right now for habitat and water quality areas, reasons. So that's where we are focusing as a department, as a state we are. Other folks have other priorities and they want to conserve and protect other lands within the state, and we're working with them to do that as well. But this is the Department of Natural Resources' highest priority. As far as appraisals that are done, we use certified appraisers that are private appraisers, I should say. They follow standard real estate practices, and all of the land is appraised at highest and best use. And the land acquisition, land selling thing, we try to offer land for sale. It's a market-driven process. Like I said previously, unless the legislature wants to tell us to sell land below appraised value, we cannot go below appraised value. The appraised value starts off at the bidding price. So I think that answers those three questions that you have, Representative.
You're good. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
We talked earlier about giving us a map of acquisitions in this region in the Prairie Conservation Plan, Pheasant Plan. But I think it would be even more helpful, instead of just doing acquisitions that we have, acquisitions that were made in previous years, previous to legacy, and then acquisitions made from legacy dollars, because that's where we're getting the big land acquisitions here. So if we could have a map, your map that shows all acquisitions, and it's going to have to be a bigger than a map like this to be clear, but we all have the capability of getting bigger maps that are clear. And that in that prairie corridor, we have, just as you have on your map, but with the little red dots, but put little green dots or pink or whatever, dots for lands that have been acquired with the legacy money. That would help, that would do a couple of things. That would show us how we're doing on the plan, and it would give us a sense of how fast we need to go to actually make this plan useful, because you do have it in corridors, and there's a good reason for that, but it's not useful unless these corridors are actually connected in life, not just on a piece of paper. So would that be something you could do for us?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McGinnis, we'll work with LSOHC staff and our GIS staff and see what we can come up with. I'm sure that we can figure something out for that.
Good
we
idea.
Have really big papers.
Really good, idea. Continue, please.
Mr. Chairman, just this last slide here. I mentioned our plans that are citizen-driven and stakeholder-driven. The Prairie Conservation Plan, the Pheasant Plan was actually a DNR plan with a lot of input from stakeholders and citizens throughout the state. The Fish Habitat Plan, WMA and AMA plans. These are all on our website. Actually, you can pull any of those up. And I should say, I don't know, Ms. Zeman, if you talked about you, whenever you, she's way ahead of me on technology, these little codes that are on the presentation here. The QR codes. If you have a QR reader on your phone, you can click on that code and it'll take you to the part of our website that talks about all of those issues and brings you to these plans. So you can do that as well. And just lastly, as I wrap this up, it's not like we're forcing people to sell land. There's a lot of people in the state of Minnesota whose desire, whose ultimate outcome of their property is for it to be held by the state, have it turn into a wildlife management area, become part of a state forest, become part of a state park. We work with willing sellers. We do not use eminent domain. We pay acquired value for it. We don't, very rarely, we pay above appraised value. If we do, we have to balance that off on the books. And we aren't doing this in a vacuum. Our regional directors, our regional managers, our staff spend hours and hours and days of working with county staff, county commissioners, so they understand our acquisitions. And ultimately, the county boards have to approve our land sales. We worked with Wadena County, for example, last year to an exchange that we committed to selling a certain amount of land to buy some land. We work with Roseau County on land acquisitions. We work with every county in the state of Minnesota so they understand what we're doing, and we have to get their approval before we do it. And strategic land asset management is a huge piece of that, so we can sit down with those staff and say, you know, ultimately we should have this parcel here in state ownership and this parcel in county ownership, and let's divest of some of these lands here. And that just helps us set up for success as government entities trying to provide recreational opportunities for our state.
Thank you. You probably don't have this here, and I'd actually like to get it in some sort of written form. And I know there's several different types of land that are sold at different times. I'm curious to know, where does the money go after a land sale transaction has been completed? And I realize that's different for different types of lands.
Mr. Chairman, we can get that for you. The simple way to think about it is acquired lands, that map that I showed you with the green dots, when we sell lands that the state has purchased, the Department of Natural Resources has purchased, it goes into the land acquisition account, which has different, so if we sell a wildlife management area, there's a fish and wildlife sub-account within that account, so we track those dollars, and it can be used for either acquisitions or paying transactional costs for future acquisitions. If it's school trust fund land, the money goes directly into the corpus. If it's county tax forfeit lands, counties get those lands. So we can provide some kind of document or table for you with that.
Can it also be used for transactional costs involved in selling land?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, that's what we use it
for. Okay, yep. And then you mentioned willing sellers of property, and I know that exists. I know full well it does. But going back to what Representative Green and others have talked about, there are lots of willing buyers out there, too, for these small 40-acre parcels, and we talk about pilt and $1.51 an acre or whatever versus what the property taxes are, and then someone builds a home on it, maybe puts a little barn, and, you know, all of a sudden the property values go up. So there are many willing buyers out there, has been demonstrated on the public auctions that have been held in Roseau County.
So there's a lot of favorable stuff out there that's possible. And then when, and I appreciate that your regional staffs are working today, you said, in northwest and northeast Minnesota and identifying and working through this, I would continue to strongly encourage you to continue to have those folks working with local counties. I know that the northern counties joint powers group up there, and members and so forth. Just so you know, I believe every single county across the northern third of the state anyway has no net gain policies in place. So a lot of the frustration that people like myself and Representative Green and Representative Lewick and Heinzman and us Eklund from northern Minnesota, who's been a county commissioner, I haven't been, but a lot of the stuff that we bring to this body as representatives is the result of conversations that we've had with people back home who are extremely frustrated with the way things are going and the impacts that it has on their local communities. These are, you know, Representative Green and I don't sit around in our offices or having a cup of coffee and just dreaming up these ideas. This is real stuff that comes from real people who are doing a good job of trying to manage their local budgets and work with their constituents to provide opportunities and to have a tax bases that they can manage. So I like the idea that the DNR is going through this process. I'm somewhat frustrated that it's taken so long. In January of 2011, I flew up to Roseau County with Commissioner Landwehr, and we flew over eastern Marshall County. You couldn't see anything because it was so foggy and cloudy that day. But that was when I had my first conversation with Commissioner Landwehr about the checkerboard pattern that exists in Marshall County. And to the best of my knowledge, nothing has changed in Marshall County in that time. So I think that a lot of the frustration that I have, and I'll speak for other members, is quite justified because the process seemingly moves so slow. And when Lesard Sams and so forth put together a list of things, boom, the acquisitions seem to happen just like that. And the reverse doesn't happen just like that. So, questions, comments, and concerns. Representative Kornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
And Mr. Meyer, we've been talking a lot about the value of the public lands. And has the DNR ever done any kind of study quantifying, public benefits, whether it's tourism or, other related, economic value to, owning public land?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, thank you for that question. We haven't done an economic analysis to say, but if you take the bench load of data that we use as a department, we present to you looking at the value of lands. There's about an acre of land per person that's out there roughly. Forest lands, on state forest lands, it's 800,000, 900,000 acres of wood that's out there. It's about 30% of the total. Just off of state forest lands, it's an $8 billion worth of economic activity, 21,000 jobs, $150 million in state and local taxes that come off that. If you look at the total wood product industry, I believe it's about $17 billion, almost $18 billion of economic activity, 64,000 jobs, $460 million in state and local taxes. Hunters spend $725 million a year on hunting, about 15% hunt only on public land. They don't have an opportunity to spend any hunt anywhere else. There's 1 million state park visitors spend about $24 a day outside of the state parks. Royalties in mining, as we heard from School Trust Fund Land Director Aaron Vandalin yesterday, $47 million in FY14, $32 million in FY15. The value of clean water that's provided by state lands is, you can't even calculate that, right? Pilt payment, if you look at what we're paying for pilt, it's about $6 per person per year. So for a family of four, for the price of about 10 gallons of gas, we have all of this economic development, public lands that are out there. Over $1 billion of economic activity, $50 million to the school trust fund, and unlimited access to nature and outdoors and hunting and fishing. So if you look at the value of that, and you balance it all out, our land portfolio, the 1.58 million acres of acquired land that we actually have, provide tremendous economic value to the state of Minnesota. And frankly, I think that's why a lot of us live here in Minnesota, is because we have opportunity to have access to these public lands, and we don't mind the winter too much. So,
Mr. Chair, I think that's very important to have that kind of that quantifiable data about the value of this land, and you know, and then there's things that we can't quite quantify that I think we need to, you know, the value of clean air, clean water, tourism, hunting, fishing. It's it does bring a lot to the state, so I appreciate your comments, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I could just wrap up our presentation here really quickly, and we do appreciate this conversation and your concerns and comments, and I think if you would go to any county in northern Minnesota and ask them, well, how are you getting along with the DNR? They would say, we have a great relationship with the DNR. We work very closely with them. We fully understand the no-net gain policies that are out there, but we've talked about it. We're
careful
there in county boardrooms. You know, Commissioner Landwehr was in Roseville County about a month ago or so, and it was an awesome meeting. It was very great. They sat on the record. I think you might have been there.
I was there.
They have a great relationship.
About 2 months ago.
We go to the Northern County Land Use Coordinating Board meetings, and we have great conversations. We understand their concerns. They understand ours. And we work together as different units of government to try to achieve the same goal. So, but we also understand that we need to do business in a better way, and we continually look at that as continuous improvement, not only within the DNR, but in the administration all overall. But innovation is the key, coming up with new ways of doing things, not being afraid to try things. Everybody can innovate. We encourage our staff to bring new ideas forward, and it increases our likelihood of success. So talking about continuous improvement, steps toward innovation, working with the county land commissioners, working with the county boards, working with the legislature to come up with new ideas, seek advice from available resources, what are other states doing, how can we do things better, working with real estate professionals and comparing what the state does to comparing what they do, and not be afraid. I don't think we should be afraid about new ideas and be adaptive to change. So as Deputy Commissioner Shad is out with our staff right now, he's encouraging these concepts and to look at things differently. We need to find out, how do we get access to these isolated parcels? How do we improve the state's portfolio? But also, how do we get these lands that in many cases are probably highly productive and buildable that we don't have access to? Those are the lands that we should be having sold for development. They're in farm parts of the state, many of them, and things like that. So we need to work with you all to figure out, how do we gain access to the state's natural resource lands that should be put back on the tax roll. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity for the discussion today.
Representative Green.
Thanks. And just to clarify on some of the stuff from Representative Hornstein's question, if we sold off some of the land, it's not going to affect the tourism that much. We still will have tourism. It's not going to go away. We don't have tourism just because the state owns this land. As far as the logging goes, we have pushed out our private owners of these lands. It's no longer feasible for them to do business in Minnesota, and that's why the state owns this land. So if the state didn't own the land and we hadn't made it so terrible for them to do business here, we would still have the logging here. So that wouldn't have gone away. We still have the trees. There's the best management. Farmland is being purchased. You don't believe that, then ask yourself why tens of thousands of acres are being farmed by the DNR as best management practices. So this is it's a serious thing for us, especially in northern Minnesota. And we really got to work to not just stop the purchase of more of this property, especially in my area, but to try to sell some of it off.
Members, questions, comments, or concerns? Anybody in the audience wish to testify? Lots of new shoes. Okay, tomorrow we will start on DNR's base budget report and start going through that. And if there's nothing else, with that, we're adjourned.